And it just like makes me feel like bad at stuff that I feel like I should be good at. And that's imposter syndrome. That's the voice, the monster under my bed is you should be good at this stuff and you're not. Or you should feel comfortable and you don't. And you can never feel enough.
Welcome to the Midlife Reinvention Podcast, a podcast helping women in career and life transitions achieve clarity on their next steps so they can transform uncertainty into an energizing next chapter. I'm your host, Kavita Ahuja, and the founder of It's My Time Now Coaching. If you're wondering what's next in your career or life, you are in the right place. Through solo and guest episodes, you'll gain practical tips, tools, and inspiration to help you uncover blocks, gain confidence, and be, do, and have what you want. I rediscovered myself after the age of 50, and I know you can too. It's my time now to help you do just that. I'm so excited you're here. Let's dive in. Welcome to this week's episode of the Midlife Reinvention Podcast. I hope you're doing really well and are looking forward to a new month of warmth and possibilities, wherever you are. I thank you so much for being here, whether it is your first time or your 100th. I don't take it lightly that you're here spending your valuable time with me for your own personal growth. I hope you're enjoying our weekly episodes and they are providing you with insights and tips on how to deal with issues you may be facing as you're going through career or life transitions. Today, we are going to delve into the important topic of imposter syndrome. Have you ever felt like you're not good enough, no matter how much you achieve? I certainly have, and this was largely due to my own expectations of myself and those that I believe society placed on me. Enjoy my conversation with Sheila Buswell, CEO, veteran, and author, as we dive into how to overcome imposter syndrome and how it affects countless individuals, especially during major life transitions. Sheila's journey from the Army to engineering to entrepreneurship sheds light on how imposter syndrome can impact us all, regardless of our accomplishments. In this episode, you will, number one, learn valuable strategies for overcoming imposter syndrome straight from the experiences of accomplished individuals such as Sheila. Number two, gain insights into how imposter syndrome can manifest in various aspects of life and career transitions and discover practical ways to combat it. And number three, understand the importance of self-grace, mindfulness, and remembering past achievements in overcoming self-doubt and achieving your goals. And don't forget to stay till the end for the Motivational Monday segment, where you will learn about surprising famous people who struggled with imposter syndrome and what they were able to achieve despite of this. I'll see you at the end with the key takeaways. Welcome, everyone, to the Midlife Reinvention Podcast, a podcast for women in transition in their careers and life. I interview incredible women for this podcast who share their stories of reinvention and who will give you their advice on how to overcome obstacles in your way to reach your vision for yourself in your next stage of life. This week, I am excited to have on the show Sheila Buswell. Sheila is the CEO and co-founder of Buswell Biomedical, a veteran of the U.S. Army, and the author of Is This Seat for Me? Overcoming Imposter Syndrome in Everyday Life and Business. In her book, Sheila shares her personal experiences with imposter syndrome, as well as the stories of a diverse group of accomplished individuals who struggled with self-doubt, but found ways to overcome it. She hopes to help others who feel limited by their beliefs experience more freedom and realize they are enough. So thank you so much for being on the show, Sheila. And I must say, I don't think I've ever had anyone on the show with your combination of skills and experience. So very pleased to have you here.
Thank you, Kavita.
Yes. So looking forward to our conversation. So I just, as we start, we've met, and for the sake of our audience and the listeners, if you could just please briefly tell us your journey. You know, you've gone from being in the U.S. Army to becoming an engineer, and now you have founded a biomedical company, and you're also an author. So it sounds like a lot of reinvention. So maybe you can kind of briefly just kind of walk us through all of those, your story.
It does sound like a lot of reinventions, but they led to each other. And that explained. When I got out of high school, I had a scholarship to the university in my state, but it was tied to a high GPA, which I didn't maintain, and I lost that scholarship. I stayed in school for another year. I worked at nights and went to school during the day, and I didn't sleep nearly enough. Like, after a year, I was like, well, I got to figure this out. So, and my GPA further dropped. So I joined them. That's when I joined the Army. And I joined the Army in 1997. And in 1998, I was deployed to Bosnia, where a generator fell on my foot. I cross-trained as a generator. That wasn't my original military occupational specialty or MOS, but I was a chemical equipment repairer at the time. And if you're not busy in the Army, you get sent out on detail, which for the most part was cleaning bathrooms. And I did not like to do that, nor did I want to be identified as doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned how to fix generators. So I was busy all the time. And after the generator fell on my foot, I was like, I had to get a medical discharge from the military, which meant I had to stay in longer. Mm-hmm. And I was in a rehabilitation hospital from the UN. And I had a dedicated nursing staff. But, I mean, it was frustrating because I don't know if you've had a foot injury or foot surgery
Not quite like that. No. No.
If you're 21, you're not aware of the stuff around you. You're very aware of yourself. But 20 years later, I got the medical discharge. I stayed in to get it. And then I went back to school and got an engineering degree. And then I went to work, and then I got my master's while I was working. The whole story there. But then I worked for a lot of great companies, but the work I did was first automation, and then I worked in biomedical companies, and I worked through FDA clearance, and I worked for R&D at a lot of biomedical companies, research and development. And then I taught school too. And there's a lot of reinvention, but I'm just trying to find out where I fit, like what I wanted to do. I wanted that feeling like you talk about ikigai, like wanting to find out what would get me to spring out of bed in the morning, and I never found it. But then in 2018, my mom fell and broke her hip in Arizona, and I'm not a caregiver. So I went out to, I don't know, be there. My parents are elderly. I think your parents are elderly also.
Yes.
So I'm lucky enough to have them, but aging parents are their own challenge.
Yes.
I'm not a caregiver. But I saw there was a need, and my mom had the same limitations I had. When I was 21 in Bosnia, I had to be accompanied for all the activities of daily living, like toileting, by a healthcare worker. I had an entire healthcare staff dedicated to me. My mom didn't have that luxury. So, and they're short staffed. So there wasn't enough healthcare workers. My mom went into that rehab facility, 110 pounds. She left there 99 pounds with a bunch of infections. Oh, and so I sat there watching it, and I'm like, there's a better way. And I knew there was a better way. It took me a while to figure it out. I had 3 weeks. So my initial intention was, I'll just go work for who's ever developing this. And then I was like, oh, nobody's developing it. And then I was like, well, then I'll develop it. And then so then I ended up getting a patent and started.
What were you developing? Sorry, what did you develop?
So the upward mobility, it's a device that uses artificial intelligence as a control system that lets patients conduct the activities of daily living, like toileting, independently if it's possible. The healthcare worker can prioritize the tasks at which they're trained to do. But the patient, if they have the ability, they can conduct these activities independently and safely. Like if they're going to fall, the sensors know they're going to fall and keep them from falling, keep them safe.
Right. Wow. I find that just as you were telling your story, it's because it's kind of like the dots, one thing it led to another. And as you said, you didn't really know what I guess your reason for being would be, if you want to use that term, and until you saw that what your mom was going through and it reminded you of what you went through, and therefore many people would have probably said, oh, not done anything about it, but kudos to you for actually using your engineering background and trying to find a solution, which is incredible, wonderful.
Well, there was a time, if I hadn't have had that holding pattern, there was a time, you ask, if not now, when? That's to make the change. Like,
yes, yes.
And I was like, if not me, then who? If it hasn't been done in 20 years, it's not going to be done. If it's not going to be done, who else besides me has this ability?
I love that.
Who else would have? And that starting the business is what led to me writing the book, because I started this book, or I started this business, and I could design my undergraduate's in mechanical engineering, my master's is in biomedical engineering. And I worked for 19 years doing that, right, professionally. Mm-hmm. In corporate America. But all of a sudden I'm pitching this business and I hear about imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked questions to further my knowledge about computer engineering or business, it wasn't that I was trying to further my knowledge or
mm-hmm.
it was, oh, you have imposter syndrome. And I didn't know what that was. And
right.
At the same time, I was given so many frustrating situations where, like, for instance, I was trying to raise money for my business and it was in a pitch competition. And my husband, who's a very nice man, I walk with a limp. And so instead of a cane, he took me to the bathroom holding my hand. And then I went to the bathroom and somebody approached him because obviously I'm just the mouthpiece. He's the one who knows all the things.
Right, right.
And that frustrated me. But I was like, I don't know if you've ever been in a pit or like that scenario, but I'm like a toddler. I was nervous, so I didn't eat, and I didn't sleep well the night before. So all of mm-hmm. a sudden, I'm like, is he mean, or did I not eat and not sleep? So I'm manifesting rage, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I waited, and then I got home, and I ate, and I was like, was this not accurate? Is this an accurate portrayal of this person? And my husband's like, no, he was a know-it-all. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I felt desperate.
Right. Right.
But then it happened over and over again. Like all of a sudden, if I didn't have any self-doubt as far as whether I could learn computer engineering or business.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, but I was getting not accused.
But you got imposter syndrome because you were trying to start this business. And even though you were so well educated and
I don't have it in that arena. I honestly, people say, don't write a book. When I started like that. I don't know if this is the right reason to write a book, but I wrote a book because I was angry. But I talked to other people and they're like, oh, this is a problem. I mean, it's a predominant problem that most people have.
Yeah.
Situations and it can vary. But my personal imposter syndrome comes around. I have been told for so long that you need to be less girly. And now, or whatever that means, because I feel weird around women in general, like groups of women uh-huh. or babies. Or young children, less, more so around babies. Like, and I don't feel like I'm enough in that aspect. But again, people say you should write from your wounds or from your scars, not your wounds.
Yes.
And that makes sense. So,
but yeah,
I didn't realize I had imposter syndrome. I thought I didn't. And then I realized that I had this problem. And then I realized it's kind of an issue that I don't like to talk about.
Yes, and probably a lot of people don't. So that I understand your book focuses on, like your book is on imposters. Then I was going to ask you, like, how did you go from starting the business to write this book? But you also highlight other accomplished individuals who have experienced this. And from your experience and from their experience as well in the book, like how does it show up when you're going through like major life transitions, for example?
Hi, my friend, Kavita here. Do you often feel blocked from moving forward? We all feel that way at times. These are referred to as energy blocks. I've created a short, actionable PDF guide to help you release your negative energy blocks. Click the link in the description to download it now for free. Now, let's get back to the episode.
So it shows up in a myriad of ways, and I liken it to a monster under the bed. It looks different for different people. One of my favorite stories is Kate Mansker. She didn't have it. She's an engineer also, but when she traveled for work, and she was a newly working mother. Mm-hmm. She was a new parent, but she had to get, she was traveling without her child, and she had to get frozen breast milk through TSA. And her male colleagues never had a problem. Mm. All of a sudden, she's like, huh, I don't, you know, she figured out how to travel, if she'd have a freezer where she would express milk, like all these things at a conference, if she'd have ability to do that, and then where to do that. And then all of a sudden, she hits the snag, and it's like she ends up, like, Kate's a rock star. Like, she was in, she's done Iron Man, she's done marathons, whatever. But she starts her own company, and she's like, the idea of, in that time, she felt like she was, like, you don't know who to ask, and you're different. And that's where a lot of imposter syndrome comes from. Your brain is designed evolutionarily to be, to make, keep you safe.
Yes.
So you look to the left and you look to the right, and you're like, where do I fit in, or how do I not?
Right, and right.
In that situation, she's like, it's very different to travel as a working mother versus a working parent as a father.
Yes.
And yeah, it was just a lot of friction that she didn't, not only did it make her feel like she didn't fit in, but it was a challenge she wasn't prepared for.
Yes.
And
yes, well, I can attest to, you know, that when I went through my career transition and I decided to embark on entrepreneurship, to start my own business, become a coach and all of that, often it would, that voice, or you would, like, I love that monster on the bed, under the bed, would say, well, who are you to do this, right? You've been doing X, Y, and Z for your whole life, and you know how to do that, but you don't know how to do this. Right. So who do you think you are, right? So I think especially, I don't know if it's more common in women, but maybe it is based on, but for both women and men. But I see that, and even with my clients, I see that very often is if they have something in their heart that they want to do, but that monster is telling them, I don't think you're good enough to do this, or who do you think you are to think that you can even embark on it?
Well, I think that's a lot. And I think,
yes,
Kavita, it was brave, and most people aren't brave to, like, try something new. And God, I think women and minorities are the ones brave enough to talk about it. I think I asked a lot of men to contribute to my book. One actually did.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think, like, Peter contributes a very powerful story. I think he talks about being a male nurse and the assumptions that are made about him and how that affects him and blah, blah, blah. It's a really powerful story. But I asked many more men and they said, okay, yes, they will do it. But when it came down to it, they didn't do it.
Interesting.
I do.
Going back to
interesting.
Yeah. Going back to what you're saying about courage, like, it took a lot of courage. So I would ask you, like, if somebody's listening to this, a woman's listening to this conversation, and then she's thinking about taking that next step, like you did, I did, but she's afraid, how did you develop the courage to do this? Because it's a completely different from what you were doing before. And what would you advise? How do they develop the courage to make that shift? And
I think Maya Angelou said something like, courage is the most important trait, because without that, the others are meaningless. But I think it's like a muscle. I mean, it's not like I have set out to do anything. It was just like, and I think that there's a point where you're like, well, I could, staying the same would cause more pain than changing. So I'm just going to change, and being aware that, okay, my brain is just wants me to be safe, but I'd never leave my house if it was up to my brain to be safe all the time. And that's not good either, right? Like, then you fail by default. And I don't want to be in the nursing home like my parent. My parents aren't in a nursing home. They're independent living. But I don't want to be in a position where I regret stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be like, I should have, I could have. And I don't know that that's, I think that that's something you should tell yourself. Like, I think all women, all people should just be like, have that conversation. Because you talk about, you have an episode where you talk about, oh, I can't think of her name. The woman who does the French cooking. I think of Martha Stewart.
Like, Martha
Stewart didn't start doing a cooking until she was later in life.
And yes, yes.
who's the painter? Grandma Moses, but she was actually...
Yeah. Yeah.
She wasn't... She didn't pick up a paintbrush until she was in her 60s.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to be like, find what you're passionate about. And it's ridiculous to know, to think you're going to know what you're going to be passionate about at 18.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Right. I love that because I love when you said don't want to regret stuff. And one of the things that I often, well, I do is I take my clients through a visioning exercise, which is called your inner mentor. I don't know if you've heard, maybe I've talked about it in one of my episodes, but it's about visualizing yourself, your future self, 20 years from now. But in it's such a vivid kind of a meditation where you can see, you have outer mentors, but this is your inner mentor who you look at, and it's you, and then you have a conversation with her. It's like, well, how did you get here? What did we do? What were our challenges? What's the biggest lesson you have for me? You know, so it's very, very powerful. And I think it's because if we have that vision of ourselves, then that moves us forward to actually achieving it, right? Versus, as you said, we don't want to be regretting the things that we know that are inside our hearts to do.
One of my five things to like personally help you get through imposter syndrome were like,
yeah, I would hold up. I'd love to hear those. Please. Yeah. Please go through those.
The fifth one that I bring up is, will it matter in a year? And I think the things you don't do matter in 25 years or whatever down the road. But there's things that you do in that instant that you're like, can matter down the road. And there's things that absolutely will not. Somebody cuts you off in traffic, it'll make you mad in that instant, but it won't matter after five breaths.
Yes.
And it's really important to have that perspective. And I got that. It comes as number five of those five things, but it was probably the first one I learned, and I got it from my grandma. My grandma would say, to keep things in perspective, will it matter in a year? And my grandma is a really tough person. Like, she survived so much. Not just survived, she thrived. And I think that that's important. Like,
yes.
How, not just to make it through, but to thrive in situations of hardship. And you're not going to do that if you don't find your icky guy, right? Like, if you don't have that passion, if you don't find your meaning for living or your your purpose, right? Like, I don't know how you're going to thrive in those situations of hardship.
Absolutely. So what are the other four, Sheila?
So the one I use the most, thank you for asking, Kavita, but the one I use the most is remember your past achievements. Like, your brain is going to run and replay. What are you doing here? You don't belong here, blah, 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 blah. But itemize your past achievements, whether it's T-ball or whatever. Like, I did a home run. Build on things.
Yeah.
And
even if they're little, right? Even if there's... seemingly small, but they're achievements that you should remember that you did this. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can build on anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to keep, just because you do, I talk about this to a great deal, just because you do a hard thing doesn't mean you can do all hard things, but that doesn't mean you can't convince yourself that you have a negative voice in your head. Build up the positive voice in your head. Like, I did this. So I eventually ran marathons, right? But I didn't start off like running a marathon. I started off running, the army makes you run 2 miles. I started running off that, and then I built up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think you add distance the same way. I'd be like, well, I can do this. I did that. I did whatever. Like, you add on things. And then one of the things that I see, my next thing is, don't compare yourself to others. I used to compare myself to people all the time, but that was before social media. Mm-hmm. That was before a lot of different things. And the way I would compare myself, if this guy can do it, I can definitely do it. You know, or this person can do that, I can. But now I don't think that's fair, because you're not comparing your reality to their reality. You compare oneself to a highlight reel that they see or perceive. And that's not fair. So I just don't even bother anymore.
Mm. I listened to an interesting, it was a bit of a meditation this morning. We're talking about this, which was a very different perspective. And I'll share it with you. It's about comparing ourselves to others. And often we look at somebody that we really admire, right? And we think, oh, I could never get there because blah, blah, blah. I couldn't do this and this and this. But the exercise was, write down the five things, the five qualities that you believe that person has that you admire. And then look at those same qualities and ask yourself, do you have those same qualities in yourself? And where has it been shown up in your life? And I did that, and I'm like, yeah, I actually I actually do have those same qualities. So I should actually not be feeling like a negative feeling when I think about that person. I should actually be more of a, wow, inspiration that, look, I have these same qualities as well. Do you know what I mean? So I thought it was a different perspective about comparing yourself with others. So I thought I'd share that.
And it's like how you, okay, so it's weird that I use this basketball analogy, but I guess it's that time of year. And in my house, it's a big deal. But like, I'm going to use Michael Jordan. Like, you only see him making the shot. You don't see all the times he missed the shot or all the times he practiced or all the times it was frustrating. But what you're saying about taking the qualities and that he had this, and if you have those qualities and the rejections he worked through and made himself better.
Yeah.
If you have those qualities, you could do that.
You could do it. Yeah. Maybe not to his level, but it doesn't really matter, right? It's to the level that you are capable of. So,
right.
Anyway, that's great. So you've gone through, I think, three. So, and then you went through two. Okay.
Practice self. I guess I did go through three because I talked about the one my grandma gave me, but the practice self-grace. I understood this one, but I didn't. I recently had, not recently, it was 6 months ago, but I had pneumonia and I was moved at the same time. And I kept thinking, I kept trying to push through it because I was like, stuff has to get done. And people kept saying, well, take it easy. And I didn't know what that meant. But it's not just accepting that I'm not 7 feet tall or I can't play for the WNBA or whatever. Like, I am what I am. I'm not a supermodel. I am what I am. But it's also like what I can do and what I can't do. And that's part of accepting where you're at. Like, okay, remembering your past achievements, but practicing self-grace is more of thinking, okay, yeah, I am not physically able to do what I was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that I can't do other things. Or if I ran a 100-meter dash, maybe I won't be Usain Bolt, but I can be the best I can be by doing these things. And I'm going to do those things or I'm not. But I'm not going to just say, well, oh, well, I'm going to eat this bag of potato chips and sit on the couch and watch TV. That's not going to help. Wallow in self-hatred's not going to help. Although that is a good, easy choice.
Yes. Great examples. Yeah. Practice self-grace. Yeah. We don't do that enough, especially as women, because we tend to give a lot, and which is fine. I mean, it's just our nature, nurturing others, whether if we have children or if we have spouses or other friends, we give. And then when it comes, we have very little left to practice our own self-grace. And that's one of the main things is like, it's not selfish to understand who you are and what you want and to take some time to do that. It's self-grace and it's important.
It is important. And I never realized it because I was surrounded by very powerful, wonderful women, but I don't remember them. Like, okay, seriously, I don't remember people talking about menopause until recently, but I'm like, how did it escape my mind or purview that it was happening all around me?
Yes.
Because they just didn't advertise that they were just uncomfortable. Like a lot of women at a certain age feel like they're going crazy. And I wasn't even aware if that was going on. So, I mean, I think it's important to take care of yourself. And I
think
that I allowed that around me. And I hope that I do it for myself now. I mean, I know that it's important.
Yes, yes.
And then I'm a work in progress. No, I have one more.
We have one more. Okay.
Be mindful of your thinking because it's really easy. And this is one I am struggle with and I am getting better at.
Be mindful of your thinking. Okay.
Yeah. Because like I start down a negative spiral and then I'll be like, oh, that's bad. Like I can't do. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm telling myself I can't. Ergo, I'll never be able to. So I need to flip that a little bit. Just flip the script in my head. And be mindful of the fact of what I'm telling myself inwardly. And I think that can be, that the monster under your bed or the whisper in your ear can be insidious because it can speak in a very convincing tone and it sneaks up on you. You can be down that path before you even realize it.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think.
Yes. Yeah. I call, in my training, I call that, it's called the gremlin. It's an inner critic, and it sits on your shoulder. And I agree with you in that I think that everything starts with our thoughts. Our thoughts control everything. And if we have negative thoughts, negative things will occur. And thoughts, feelings, and then action, right? Whereas if we flip the script, as you said, and even catch ourselves when we start to have that negative thought and flip it, just stop and say, why am I thinking this? And flip it. It just makes a whole lot of difference. So I think that then you can, if you don't flip it, then you go down that rabbit hole of negative, negative, and that negativity, right? And that energy just multiplies.
Yeah. And then you end up wallowing in the self-hatred. Yes.
And then you eat the potato chips and go on the sofa, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And I think that should be everyone's goal, to avoid that situation where you're just wallowing in.
Yeah. Great tips. Really great tips.
These are all things that I practice, but I haven't perfected. Like, will this matter?
No, I don't think anybody's perfected them, right? I mean, how can you, if you perfected them, then you would, like, it's a work in progress, everybody. And that's why I continually bring up these topics, because the more you hear it from different people in different ways, but the way that something will maybe click in your brain, you resonate with it, and it's like, oh, I get it, right?
You think you understand something fully, and then I feel like a video game, life presents you with another challenge that teaches you the thing in a different way, and you up your skill level. And the things, if I'm presented with something that happened to me when I'm in my 20s and I'm in my upper whatever, like at a later stage in my life, I'm going to kill that challenge. But I get presented with another challenge.
Yes.
Again, I just learned what a mask, like a eyelash curler was, and it totally flipped my script. Like, I was down a spiral of negative self-talk. Like, why don't I know what this thing is? Teenagers know what this is. I don't know what this is. And it's really easy to talk negatively to yourself about anything.
That's funny. So Sheila, these are great. I just, maybe just kind of, maybe in a different topic. You, like, your background is amazing. Like, you were in the Army, you were an engineer, or you are an engineer. And so those are not typically female professions, right? Typically, right? So you must have experienced some kind of gender bias or discrimination and some false assumptions people made of you. Did you? And can you tell us what you learned or what happened?
So the military is weird, because at the end of the day, I was a generator mechanic. That's functionally what I did. And if your lights are out, you want your lights to come back on, or whatever the power providing is. You don't care what the generator mechanic looks like or what's going on in their underwear. You just want your lights to come back on. And that was an instantaneous lesson that people learned, especially when you're deployed or in the field or whatever. Like, that's, they want their heat, they want their light, they want their comforts. In the corporate America, it was a little bit more difficult. Sometimes I sat at tables where I was the only one of me, and it was not easy. Like, my words got stepped on a lot, and I wasn't as quickly accepted by everybody. I'm just going to say it. I think people talk about your words getting stepped on, or somebody else saying the exact same thing louder and getting, or just saying it in a male voice or whatever. And it would get frustrating, but over time, I think it hasn't changed as much as I would like, but it did change. Like, there were tables, and that's why I say is the seat for me. There was tables that I sat at that were initially hostile, that people were like, do you deserve to be here? Because they had the situation where, like, I had this imagery of a bouquet, like you want all the different color flowers in the bouquet. Mm-hmm. But they had the imagery forced on them by people who were useless. And so it's sometimes that backfired. People who would have been open to change weren't. So I had to wait for the position or the situation to prove that I belonged there. And I don't think there's a lot of, I don't know, you're in Canada, so I don't know if Dilbert is Canadian. Is okay, so not all engineers look like Dilbert.
Yeah, and I know who Dilbert is,
Okay.
Yes.
But there are people who look like Dilbert who are more readily accepted. However, like Kate Mansker is an engineer, and she's a powerhouse. Dr. Sylvia Zustiak is a professor of engineering, and she's got a PhD in chemical engineering, I believe. But it's like, that's not what people think of when they close their eyes and they think of an engineer. They think of Dilbert. And it's frustrating because I think this is where I'm like, representation matters. And things that I experienced when I was an engineer, my niece, who's got a master's in engineering, also experiences 20 years later. And in 2019, I had an engineer with less education in a different department tell me I'd be hot if I grew my hair out and dyed it. And I'm like, wow, that just came out of your mouth. I didn't say anything out loud. I just was like, because I was so shocked. Yeah. I had been put in positions where I was like, my words were stepped on. I was interrupted in a meeting by somebody who didn't know materials to make materials corrections, things like this. And I kind of dealt with those in a one-by-one basis. But I was like, I remember like when I talk about being a work in progress, and I have that thing about my grandma used to say, will this matter in a year?
Yeah.
I didn't react the way I wanted to.
Is that why you decided to write the book, Vila? Like, well, all these experiences that you, is that what led you to kind of say, this enough is enough, or tell me?
I think that it was a buildup, but when I started the company and I was asking questions, and it was automatically like labeled as imposter syndrome instead of like whether a valid question, but it was also coupled with this, like, couldn't possibly be that I knew about artificial intelligence, machine learning, and business. I have imposter syndrome. I want to ask questions because I'm not sure. No, I wanted to further my knowledge. And I thought I didn't have imposter syndrome. But then I found out it was a lot. And there's been so many times I've been the only woman in the room. And it's frustrating that as I grow up, as I advance in my career, there was less and less women. Mm-hmm. And I think it feeds that. If you look to the left or right of you, there's fewer and fewer people that look like you. And then I was told, if you want to be taken seriously as an engineer, be less girly. So
are you serious?
Oh, yeah. No, I was told.
Wow.
So then all of a sudden, I'm in my upper 40s and I don't feel comfortable around groups of women because I don't feel girly.
Girly. It's all these labels. All these labels that are
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I don't feel feminine enough around women. And I feel like I never had a biological clock because I was so focused on getting my education and furthering my career and doing things like that. And I'm not saying people don't do those things, but it's just for me, I never had that like ticking in my ear.
Yeah.
But then like people feel very comfortable, especially other women who'd be like, you belong here. And they'd be like, here, hold my baby. And I'm like, I don't want to hold your baby. Why don't you have kids? Why don't you know how to hold makeup? And it just like makes me feel like bad at stuff that I feel like I should be good at.
Yeah.
That's imposter syndrome. That's voice, the monster under my bed is, you should be good at this stuff and you're not. Or you should feel comfortable and you don't.
Yeah.
And you can never feel enough.
Yeah. And it manifests in so many different ways and for so many different people, right? In different ways. Like you just described a few different things, like in your work and around women, around babies, because that's not what your experience was. But that doesn't mean you're less than. It just means that's who you are.
The voice in my head. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And I'm sure in your book, you've probably highlighted many of these. You have highlighted many of these different people who with different experiences that I think we can all learn from. So tell us how you've found these people and how did that...
Well, I knew. That's a weird thing. It's not like I... Like, Kavita, you have this podcast where you talk to a lot of people. I did yoga next to Peter. These are people who were in my circle, and I never talked to them about this stuff. I ran with Kate. I did yoga next to Peter. There's a bunch of people in this. It's like everybody
experiences it.
And it seemed like it was a huge problem that wasn't addressed. And it wasn't that it wasn't addressed. It was like people don't talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the part that to me is frustrating, is I think there's a way to get through it if you just feel like you're comfortable talking about it.
Yeah. And you are doing that. And that's amazing. And I'm so glad that this, even though we hear about imposter syndrome, it's kind of become a term, kind of delved into it, the five reasons, the five steps to overcome it. Those were great highlighting people, everyday people who have experienced it and you've experienced it in your life, and kind of normalizing it, which is, I think, really important. And people who are listening who may have feeling like there are not, who am I to do this, or I'm not good enough, I think by reading your book and by listening to your, taking those lessons that you've shared into their lives, I think it's really important. So good for you to have written a book and to have, I mean, sharing your story on podcasts such as these. So it's, you know, that's how we learn. So that's why I love doing what I'm doing, because anybody who's listening will find a little pearl that they can take into their life and make it for the better. So I really appreciate that. So tell us now, Sheila, what are you up to? What are you doing now? Are you focusing on the book, or are you still working, or are you, what's your next steps?
So Bustful Biomedical is like my North Star. I do the upper, we're developing the upward mobility and taking it through FDA approval so that we, when I am at a point again where I need assistance going to for the activities of daily living, it's there. Mm-hmm. And so we're developing that. And that's what I'm doing full time. I am promoting the book because I think it's important to get that message out. Like,
yes, it is. It is. Yes. And do you have a patent, I believe, right? On your...
Yes.
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 Congratulations. That's something that's so important.
Thank you.
Yes.
There's a whole strategy, but the first arrowhead was getting that first patent through. But oh, yeah, nice. Patents pending, and we have that. But getting that first patent through was,
yes,
like,
yes,
a whole device.
Yeah. Well, it was fascinating learning about your story, and thank you so much. And is there anything you'd like to kind of end off with for people who are listening?
I think it's important that everybody knows your brain is to keep you safe. So the stories in your head are just that. But if you're safe all the time, you won't ever leave your bed. So it's important. And even then, right? Like, it's important to be aware of that. And so I think it's important to just, you got to take chances. Just do what's important to you. Don't take unnecessarily chances, but do what's important. Any chances worthwhile.
Yeah. Good, you're enough, right? Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here. It was a wonderful conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
I trust you enjoyed this episode with Sheila Buswell, and it opened your eyes to how prevalent imposter syndrome really is, regardless of our accomplishments. Here are her key takeaways. 1, imposter syndrome is like the monster under your bed or the gremlin in your head, telling you that you should be good at the stuff you're not, or you should feel comfortable and you don't, and you never feel good enough. 2, if staying the same would cause more pain than changing, you need to do something about it, because you don't want to be in a position where you regret things you never did. 3, you can begin to overcome imposter syndrome by 1, keeping things in perspective. Will it matter in a year? 2, not comparing yourself to others. Remind yourself of your great qualities. 3, practicing self-grace. 4, be mindful of your thinking. And 5, remember your past achievements. The biggest takeaway from this episode is this. If you're struggling with imposter syndrome, recognize that it is perfectly normal and affects countless individuals, especially during major life transitions. It is about how you deal with it and move forward that matters. For our Motivational Monday segment, I'm going to share 2 examples of highly successful individuals who struggled with imposter syndrome and overcame it to achieve great success. You must have heard of Maya Angelou. She was a renowned American poet, memoirist, and civil rights activist who has struggled with feelings like a fraud despite her numerous achievements. She overcame this feeling and went on to become one of the most celebrated writers of the 20th century. And I'm sure you've heard of Michelle Obama. The former First Lady of the United States has spoken openly about her experiences with imposter syndrome, particularly during her time in the White House. Despite these feelings, she became a powerful advocate for various causes and inspired millions of people around the world. These examples demonstrate that imposter syndrome can affect individuals from all walks of life. But with perseverance and determination, it is possible to overcome these feelings and achieve great success. If you are struggling with imposter syndrome, know that you're not alone, and for some guidance on how to recognize this block, you can download my free Negative Energy Blocks guide in the show notes. You will receive the guide and follow-up videos explaining exactly what four types of blocks are and how to recognize them and overcome them. If you'd like to discuss your particular situation with me, I'm also offering a free 45-minute coaching consultation, and you will find the link to register below. There's no obligation, just a conversation to get to the bottom of why you may be feeling like an imposter or anything else that is on your mind at this important stage in your life. Till next time, my friend, thank you for listening, and be well and be motivated.